This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are moments when a criminal case becomes more than just a question of guilt or innocence. It becomes a test, not just for the people involved, but for the system itself. The shooting of Charlie Kirk and the state of Utah's decision to charge Tyler Robinson with aggravated murder and seek the death penalty is one of those moments. Today, we're diving into what's actually happening in the courtroom, not just the accusations, not just the headlines, but the actual process. Who's defending Robinson? Not because we're trying to out them or dox them or anything like that, but because this is reality. This is how our system works. You are innocent until proven guilty. Plenty of people saying, well, he's on camera. Yeah, you're right. Plenty of people do things directly on camera, are caught, but they still go through this process. So that's what we're talking about today. It's not about politics. It's not about this. It's about that. It's about understanding the process. And that's what we are diving into today. Okay. So who's defending Robinson and why were they chosen? What does the prosecution have to prove? And how does the legal system hold up when everything is on the line? It's a lot of questions. A lot of questions that I think a lot of us have. Like, well, exactly what I was saying earlier. He was on camera doing this. He's admitted to it, allegedly. So what is there to parse out in a court of law? A lot. So let's start from the beginning. According to public charging documents, Tyler James Robinson, 22 years old, is accused of shooting and killing Charlie Kirk during an event at the Utah Valley University on September 10th of 2025. Kirk was on stage speaking to a crowd of over 3,000 when that shot rang out from a nearby rooftop. Prosecutors allege that a bolt-action rifle was positioned for a clear line of fire. Surveillance footage, ballistic analysis, and DNA reportedly link Robinson to the weapon. So, if all is as is said, pretty clear-cut case, right? But there's more. In a press release the following week, the Utah County Attorney's Office confirmed that Robinson had been formally charged with 7 felony counts. The lead charge is aggravated murder, a capital offense in Utah that's followed by felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily injury, 2 counts of obstruction of justice, 2 counts of witness tampering, and a charge related to committing a violent offense in the presence of a child. Prosecutors also filed sentencing enhancements, including one that alleges the victim, Charlie Kirk, was targeted because of his political speech. Now, here's what happens next when the state files charges like these against someone who can't afford a lawyer. The law requires that counsel be appointed, but in a case involving the death penalty, that lawyer can't be just anyone. They have to meet strict qualifications. Years of experience, a track record with serious felonies, and preferably experience in capital litigation. What does capital litigation mean? It means the death penalty. When someone's life is on the line, look, you may want them to die. I'm totally cool with it. You go and do this to somebody. Yeah, I'm totally fine if this is you being taken off the planet as well. But there is a process to this happening. So, on September 24th, the Utah County Commission approved the appointment of attorney Kathleen Nestor to represent Robinson. That's according to county records and reporting from multiple Utah outlets. Nestor's resume fits the bill. She is a former federal public defender for the District of Utah. She has served as executive director of the Federal Defenders of San Diego. She has more than 30 years in both state and federal courtrooms. It's important. And notable, she doesn't volunteer for this, okay? So please understand that before people are like, I'm going to find out who that is and I'm going to tell her what I think. That's great. Nobody gives a shit what you think, by the way. This is what she does for a living. And when you're in that pool of attorneys for the state, you get what the state gives you. You can't say no unless you actually have a legitimate conflict. She was appointed. Okay, so think of that before everybody gets mad at this person. She was appointed under a contract with the county in compliance with the Sixth Amendment and Utah's indigent defense protocols. It's not a political move. It's not a personal belief. It's about fulfilling a constitutional duty to provide a defense even in the most difficult emotionally charged cases. So please, for the love of God, take that away from this, okay? These people are not out there going, oh, I agree with his opinions, I'm going to go for this. No. That's not how this works. So follow along and play along with the game at home before you go get mad and start spouting off. Now, according to media reports, Nestor is not alone. She's reportedly working with Michael Burt and Richard Novak, two nationally known capital defense attorneys that are based in California. Burt, in particular, is widely recognized in the legal field for his work in high-profile death penalty cases going back decades. Novak is a longtime federal and state criminal defense lawyer who has served as learned counsel. What does that mean? Counsel specifically qualified for capital defense in multiple cases. Yes, I know, a bunch of fancy words. To be precise, as of this recording, there is no public court filing formally listing Burt and Novak as co-counsel, okay? But according to national reporting, including outlets like Reuters and the New York Post, both have been involved in building the defense strategy. So more paperwork is coming, basically. So while we'll use cautious language here, it's fair to say the team is experienced and is being treated as high stakes as they can be on both sides. The state's position is also very clear. Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray has made public statements committing to pursue the death penalty. The enhancements in the charging documents emphasize what prosecutors view as key aggravating factors. First, that the act was, in fact, politically motivated. Second, that it was committed in public with minors present. And third, that it posed a substantial risk of death to others. Yes, it did. You're firing a weapon into a crowd. I don't care who you're aiming for, where you're aiming. Things can go wrong. Things did go wrong. He hit his target. Let's talk about what the defense is up against. First, the note. Prosecutors say a written note was found, allegedly in Robinson's handwriting, stating, I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and I'm going to take it. I know. Bizarre, creepy, blunt, cold. Somewhat calculated, somewhat callous. I mean, it sounds about as exciting as, I heard the McRib is back at McDonald's, I'm going to get one for lunch. Not exactly how one would think. This is how I'm going to word what's going to destroy the rest of my existence on this planet. I'm just going to put it under this little keyboard here and head off and go pick up the McRib. I mean, go shoot some. I mean, it's like insane. But it is what it is. It's because you would do something one way or you think someone should do something some way doesn't mean they're going to do it that way. According to prosecutors, this note was referenced in text messages Robinson allegedly sent to his romantic partner shortly before and after the shooting. One of those messages allegedly told the recipient to look under the keyboard where the note was found. I know. Seems weird. And I'm not here to debate what's weird right now. We're just talking about what we know as facts of the case. So you can roll your eyes to that and go, that seems fishy. Yeah. Does seem a little freaking weird, doesn't it? But again, deep breath. We're not talking about that angle right now. There's a lot, and we got to stay on track. The defense will almost certainly challenge this on multiple fronts: authorship, context, timing, and admissibility. Is the note authenticated? Were proper warrants used to retrieve the phone data? Was the message time-stamped in a way that clearly links it to the act? And why is it gone? Why is there just an image of this? I know the story is, well, maybe he threw it away or like it. Again, a lot here that's like, huh? Weird. Next, the DNA. According to early forensic reports cited by the county, DNA recovered from the trigger of the rifle matched Robinson's. Again, the defense will look at the chain of custody. Who recovered the weapon? How was it stored? Was it tested in a timely, reliable manner? Were alternative explanations ruled out? That's what they're going to look at. Another component is the location. Prosecutors allege that Robinson had access to a building adjacent to the university's event space and that he positioned himself in a concealed spot on the roof. The building was not open to the public that day, but prosecutors say surveillance footage and key card data link Robinson to the area. We've seen the pictures. We've seen the footage. And if it's real, which it does appear to be, it does show him there. So there's that. From a defense standpoint, this opens the door to a timeline analysis. Was he there during the window of opportunity? Could someone else have accessed that space? Are there unexplained gaps in surveillance coverage? And then there's the issue of motive. The state says this was political. The enhancement for targeting based on political speech is rarely used, but it is serious. It elevates a capital case even further by giving jurors a second layer of context to weigh the sentencing. If the defense challenges the enhancement, and they likely will, it will involve a careful analysis of Robinson's writings, online activity, communications, and prior statements. If the evidence is circumstantial or ambiguous, that could raise questions for a jury. Another early move from the defense, they declined to waive the preliminary hearing. That means they're forcing the prosecution to put forward probable cause in open court. Good. Transparency is good in a case like this. That's more the better, because this is only going to get crazier and conspiracy theories are only going to get worse. They're not letting the case roll forward on momentum alone. That's strategic. It buys them some time. It opens the door to challenge the strength of the initial evidence, and it starts to build a public record that could be important for pretrial motions and future appeals. So what happens next? Well, this case will likely follow a long procedural roadmap. The defense is expected to file motions to suppress certain evidence, possibly the note, the text message, or even the forensic filings. They may challenge the legality of the search warrants or the methods used to retrieve and analyze digital data. They might also file a motion to sever counts or to move the trial venue out of Utah County due to pretrial publicity. When jury selection begins, if it ever begins, if we ever get to an actual jury trial, which I would say is highly unlikely at this point, it will be exhaustive. In a death penalty case, jurors must be death qualified, meaning they cannot be categorically for or against capital punishment. The voir dire process can take weeks. Each juror will be screened for biases, political, personnel, emotional, and any other reasons that they may have, that they may be biased in a case. The defense will likely seek jurors who are capable of considering both aggravating and mitigating factors with care and understand what that means. If the case goes to trial, it will unfold in two distinct phases. Phase one is the guilt phase. The prosecution will lay out its case, evidence, motive, timeline, and the enhancements. The defense will then counter challenging timelines, forensic assumptions, and the chain of custody issues. If Robinson is convicted of aggravated murder, the trial moves immediately to phase two, the penalty phase. This is where the jury decides between life without parole and death. It's where the defense brings in mitigation evidence, including mental health evaluations, personal history, psychological trauma, character witnesses, anything else that argues against execution. And here's where the defense's preparation really matters. Death penalty cases are not just about what happened. They're about who the person is, what led them there. Whether the act, as heinous as it may be, reflects something so irredeemable that the state should take the person's life, or whether life in prison, permanently removed from society, is punishment enough. Now, looking further down the road, there's the possibility of federal involvement. So far, as of this recording, no federal charges have been filed, but the Department of Justice is monitoring the case. If the allegations of political targeting rise to the level of federal hate crime statuses or civil rights violations, it is possible federal charges could be layered on top of the state case. If that happens, Robinson's legal team will have to manage multiple court systems simultaneously, state and federal, each with their own rules, timelines, and procedures, because everything's so easy in our system, isn't it? And no matter what happens at trial, the case is almost guaranteed to go through years of appellate review. Death penalty convictions are automatically appealed in Utah. Every ruling on evidence, on jury instructions, on motions will be scrutinized by higher courts. The appellate process could last 5 years, could last 10. That's how it works. And it's built that way for a reason, because when the state is asking to take a life, there can be no margin for error. That's why the defense team matters. That's why the process matters. Not because of who the defendant is, but because of who we are as a legal system. The Constitution doesn't protect popular defendants. It protects all defendants, even the ones accused of unthinkable acts, even the ones everyone assumes are guilty. Because the law doesn't run on assumption. It runs on evidence, on cross-examination, on verified testimony, on procedure. This case is going to test that. It's going to test how we separate emotion from law. It's going to test whether we will still believe that due process is a requirement, not a formality. Tyler Robinson is accused of killing Charlie Kirk. The state wants to execute him. But until that verdict is reached and every appeal is heard and defense does their job, this ain't going to be over. And the court has a duty to listen. Because in a country that claims to believe in justice, the burden is always on the state. And justice is only justice if it holds up under pressure. What's likely to happen? A plea deal to probably avoid the death penalty and a costly, lengthy process that I just talked about. I'd put my money on that. But again, anything is possible. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you are watching us or listening to us. Whether that be on YouTube, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You'll find us there or wherever you get podcasts. Until next time, I am Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.